This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Six states head to the polls today to vote in the so-called Big Tuesday primaries, but thousands of people living in those states won't be casting any ballots because their right to vote has been taken away. We're talking about citizens convicted of felonies. Now, the laws around voting rights for convicted felons vary state by state in this country, but it's estimated that over 6 million Americans have been barred from voting because of felony convictions, including one of our listeners.
My name's Scott. I'm calling from Salt Lake City. Being a white-collar felon, I can tell you that I truly miss the privilege of voting. Over the 32 plus years I was eligible to vote, I probably missed about only four opportunities. And it's something that I hold near and dear. And when you're on the wrong side of the criminal justice system, it's all about humiliation and retribution.
Scott, thanks for that call. And a member of our 1A text club wrote us this: I can't vote because I live in Wisconsin and I'm on parole. It devastates me that I cannot partake in what should be my right as a citizen. I made a mistake in life. I served the time I had to, and I abide by the rules that I have been given. I graduated college. I had a baby. I lost a house. I can pay my taxes and get health care, but I can't vote for public servants that could potentially represent what I hope to see in my city, much less across my country. Well, today we're kicking off a new series. It's called Blocked from the Ballot. Every Tuesday in March, we're going to spotlight a different part of the U.S. population that won't have a say in who becomes president in November because they're not allowed to vote. And today we start with citizens who have been convicted of felonies. Joining us from NPR in New York is Myrna Perez. She's the director of voting rights and elections at NYU's Brennan Center for Justice. Myrna, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Orlando in Florida is Desmond Mead. He's the president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, a grassroots organization run by people who've been convicted of felonies. Desmond, great to have you with us.
Todd, thank you for having me on the show.
And we'd love to hear from you as well. So many 1A listeners getting in touch with us. If you've been convicted of a felony, how has your record impacted your ability to vote in your state? Or maybe you're opposed to the idea of expanding voting rights. What's your argument for keeping these laws in place? Melissa says, once you commit a felony, you are no longer someone who can be trusted with the decisions regarding our republic. You should not be allowed to vote. That's Melissa's take. Well, comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us at 1A. You can email us 1A@WAMU.org. Desmond, what does the right to vote look like for people convicted of felonies in your state of Florida right now?
Well, I tell you, Todd, that until recently, Florida was one of four states that permanently disenfranchised American citizens. And so anyone convicted of a felony, and a lot of times when people hear the word felony, they tend to think of just the worst crimes that are out there. But in Florida, it's any felony, and it could be something as simple as driving with a suspended license, catching a lobster whose tail is too short, or even trespassing on a construction site, or releasing helium-filled balloons in the air. And prior to November of 2018, anyone convicted of any of those offenses, no matter how small or how large the offense is, they permanently lost the right to vote. Yeah. And that was very tragic in our state, especially when you're considering a lot of these folks were folks who were in the military that served our country and put their lives and bodies on the line for our democracy, only to come back with post-traumatic stress syndrome, getting in bar fights or whatever, or using drugs, and then being disbarred for life.
Now, we're going to talk about how the law changed in Florida. You said up until recently, people convicted of felonies lost their right to vote forever. We're going to talk about how and why that law changed. And you had a big part in that, Desmond, but you were convicted on drug charges and finished serving your time back in 2004. Tell me a little bit what it was like for you watching elections and ballot initiatives go by year after year, but with no right to take part.
Yeah, I mean, that was a horrible feeling. You know, I, through drug addiction, I found myself on the wrong side of the law countless times. But, you know, eventually I ended up, you know, homeless, addicted to drugs, recently released from prison and standing in front of railroad tracks, waiting on a train to come so I can jump in front of it. You know, I thought my life was over. I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, but fortunately, the train didn't come that day. And I crossed those tracks and I checked myself into drug treatment. From there, I moved into a homeless shelter. While there, I enrolled in a local college and did real well and kept progressing in my academic studies to eventually getting accepted into law school and graduating a law school in May of 2014. But however, even after overcoming those obstacles and turning my life around and dedicating my life to giving back to my community, because I lived in Florida, I still couldn't vote. And the ultimate slap in the face was when my wife, Sheena, she ran for office in 2016. And, you know, I remember when somebody asked me if I was going to be excited to be able to vote for my wife. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, like I can't even vote for my own wife. While at the same time, I'm reading reports about prisoners in Puerto Rico being able to vote during the presidential preference primaries in Maine and Vermont, where people never lose the right to vote, that people are able to vote there. And across the country, so many folks who served their time, paid their debt back to society, was able to participate in elections. But me living in Florida precluded me from even voting for my own wife. And that was the ultimate slap in the face, because nothing speaks more to citizenship than being able to vote. And I was voiceless.
Well, we asked 1A listeners if they're unable to vote because of a felony conviction. We've heard from many of you already in this hour. Here's what one listener shared.
Hi, my name's Shannon. I'm 47 years old. Went to prison at 18 for 5 years for selling less than a half ounce of marijuana. Never been allowed to vote. Had to get a lawyer now 30 years later and got my record expunged just to get my voting right back. And it's really absurd to see all these other states that want to just give felons their voting right when, you know, there's people out there that had to do it the legal way and pay a lawyer to get their record expunged. Now they're legalizing weed everywhere. The states that are legalizing it are expunging people's records for free. And I just don't think it makes any sense.
Now, Desmond, we're going to talk about different states and different laws in 1 second, but Shannon's pointing to a dilemma there, somebody who did his time and the extraordinary expense it can take in some states to even get a judge to the point where you can have your record modified so that you can get your right to vote back.
Yes, that is definitely an issue that we've been facing for a long time. I mean, when you look at the criminal justice system as a whole, what you see is that it is really favored towards people with money or rich folks. From bail, not people not being able to post bail, therefore not even able to really thoroughly fight their cases, to expenses that folks are experiencing while they're incarcerated and the economic burden that it places on a person's family because they're too poor to afford the cost of prison, right? And then all the way up to, you know, folks getting out with enormous debts and then having to go through extraordinary measures just to be able to be part of society. And that is all contrapositive to what we as a society really want. You know, when we talk about we want to have safer communities and understanding that 95% of people who are incarcerated are coming out, you know, we understand that it is in our best interest to make sure that people coming out did not face these barriers that's currently in place, because that hinders successful reintegration and it contributes to increasing recidivism rates.
Myrna Perez from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, take us across the country. How different are different laws in different states? Desmond mentioned Vermont, where I think people convicted of felonies still retain their right to vote, but it's very different in other places.
Sure. The country is a patchwork. We have some states where like Maine and Vermont, where you never lose your right to vote. And then you have a state like Iowa, where it doesn't matter what you did, doesn't matter how long ago you did it, it doesn't matter how old you were when you did it. If you have a felony conviction, You do not get your right to vote back unless the government specifically pardons you. Many of the states are somewhere in between. But we do know that right now, 31 states disenfranchise some members of the community with a criminal conviction in their past. And as Desmond indicated, that is completely unhelpful to the idea of successful reintegration. We want to make people stakeholders. We want to get people invested in their community. We want people to understand all of those pro-social acts that voting is pregnant with, like waiting in line, like having a peaceable way to solve differences, like understanding that there are certain times and places and rules that you have to follow. And voting is not only an indicator of the direction that you want your country to go in. It's not just your voice. It's also emblematic and full of all sorts of other activities that people can practice that says, I care about my community. I care about someone other than myself. I'm willing to go to the trouble of standing in line, taking the time off of work, finding a babysitter so that I can cast my judgment in favor of the direction that the country is going in. I mean, I think one of the most beautiful and impactful consequences and signs of what happened in Florida, and Desmond and I talk about this all the time, is that voters in Florida went to the polls to cast a ballot so that their neighbors and family members who couldn't would be able to. They got out of their own head. They weren't thinking about themselves. They were thinking about what kind of democracy do we want? Who do we want bringing into it? And that we as a country are better off when we have the judgment and expertise and experience of everybody in our community.
We're going to talk more about how the law changed in Florida when it comes to voting rights for people convicted of felonies. You're listening to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Desmond, we got this message from a member of the 1A Text Club who said there are rights and privileges that one loses when one chooses not to abide by that contract, the social contract. Do I think that prisoners should be able to earn the right to vote back? Yes, I do. But I think it needs to be part of the rehabilitation process to prove that they want to be part of the fabric of a functioning society in ways that I think Myrna just mentioned. Our member of our 1A Text Club writes, not everybody does want to be part of that fabric. Desmond, what's your response to that?
Well, first and foremost, I say that the right to vote is inherently given to any American citizen. No one has to prove themselves to get the right to vote. You have to be an American citizen and 18 years of age. That is it, right? And so to even suggest that someone has, through extraordinary measures, to be able to get the right to vote, that is something that's contrary to even our principles of what democracy looked like. Every American citizen should have a vote. Every American citizen should have a voice. I'm reminded of my family. You know, I have four boys. And sometimes these boys can do some things that would really piss me off. But at the end of the day, they never stop being my sons, no matter what they do. All right. And so when you talk about citizenship, right, what speaks to it more than anything is being able to vote. And no matter what anyone does, they should never stop being an American citizen. But that is exactly what happens when we strip the right to vote away from our citizens. And if we go as far as to strip the right to vote away from them, then we should readily and immediately restore that right, especially after they have completed the punishment that we've imposed.
Now, Myrna, I want to talk specifically about Florida, and we'll talk more about it as we go forward here. Florida had a long debate. You mentioned it, over voting rights for people convicted of felonies. Those rights were restored. Then last month, a federal appeals court ruled that a law blocking the voting rights of people with felony convictions on the basis of things like unpaid fines and fees, that law was unconstitutional. Where do things stand right now in terms of your right to vote if you have a felony in Florida?
So as an initial matter, the people of Florida voted overwhelmingly to restore voting rights to their neighbors upon completion of their terms of sentence. Then we had a handful of politicians who had a lot of influence in the legislature pass a piece of legislation that put a lot of barriers in front of it, including barriers that required folks to pay off all their fees, fines, and even their restitution, even those that were unrelated to their criminal sentence, those that had connections because they had been converted to civil liens or because of they were part of the processing fees that happen when you become a criminal defendant. I think a lot of people don't realize that. In Florida, basically criminal defendants have to pay for the criminal justice system.
Go ahead.
So what that ended up meaning was that if you had completed your terms of probation and parole, but you were wealthy, you could pay off all your fees and fines. But if you hadn't, you were in a similar position to the one that you had been before we had passed the amendment. And I want to be 100% clear that the legislature could have taken a lot of different alternative options. They could have reduced the amount of time that people serve on probation and parole. They could have reduced the amounts of the fees and fines. They could have, by operation of law, reduced sentences. And instead, they didn't. They made it harder for folks to be able to get their right to vote back under the amendment. A number of people, including the Brennan Center, brought a lawsuit on behalf of 17 individuals who didn't have the ability to pay. It wasn't clear what they owed, or what they owed was beyond what they had the financial means to do and wouldn't be able to reasonably be able to do it for any foreseeable future. A federal judge said that insofar as someone is unable to pay any fees, fines, or restitution, then there needed to be some alternative method to allow them to be able to register to vote.
Well, a member of our 1A text club sent this to us. Until 2017, I was legally blocked from voting due to a felony in 2005. It was a horrible feeling having no voice to contribute. Then I moved to another state. I registered. I became a registered voter again. Voila, the feeling was almost freeing. Since 2017, I haven't missed a single election. We're speaking to Myrna Perez of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU and Desmond Mead, president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Much more in just a moment. It's 1A. Back now to our conversation on voting rights for individuals with felony convictions. It's part of our new series called Blocked from the Ballot. Myrna Perez is here, the Director of Voting Rights and Elections at NYU's Brennan Center for Justice, and Desmond Mead, the President of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. We got this from one listener in Florida, a member of the 1A Text Club, who wrote, "I was legally blocked from voting from September 1987 until June of 2014 in Florida for my felony conviction. While my sentence was short, I was barred from applying for clemency until 10 years after my conviction. I applied for the restoration of my rights in 1997. In 2014, I was one of the roughly 400 people that were granted clemency by Rick Scott, the governor. For 27 years, I was disenfranchised. The very first thing I did when receiving notice of the restoration of my rights was to register to vote, in this case, as a Democrat." That from one listener. Desmond, you were instrumental in Amendment 4. This is the law change that changed the Constitution in Florida back in 2018, restoring the rights of people convicted of felonies in Florida to the franchise. Tell me about your role in that fight.
Wow. That would be a long story, Todd. But basically, I served as chair of the Floridians for a Fair Democracy, which was a ballot committee that was formed to sponsor the amendment. And I represented, you know, also the voices of people who are directly impacted, people who could not vote. You know, at the end of the day, you know, in spite of all of the conversations and the narratives, at the end of the day, what sits at the heart of this are people, regular, everyday people from all walks of life and all political persuasions, people like me who just want to really move on with our lives and be a part of this great democracy. And we know that, you know, we've always said that, you know, we fought just as hard for the person who wanted to vote for Donald Trump as the person who wished he could have voted for President Barack Obama. So that at the end of the day, man, every American citizen should be able to have their voices heard, and we should fight for that right, in spite of how we think people may vote.
Now, Myrna, before we took a pause, you were talking about how the law has changed in Florida. Desmond was critical to the fight for Amendment 4. And then you talked about the law that came behind that that said, yes, you have the right to vote, but you have to pay your fines and fees, and how that kind of created a two-tier system of people who had the money and people who didn't have the money. I want to play you a clip of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He's still pushing to keep that law that I just mentioned in place. Here he is in an interview with WPLJ, a local TV station in Miami, defending that requirement that people with criminal convictions pay fines and fees before they can vote.
With this, I told them, implement it as it was written. And I think the controversy to me is not really substantive. I mean, the people who advocated for this amendment, they went to the Supreme Court and said, of course, whatever you're sentenced to, you've got to finish that, whether that's incarceration, whether that's a fine, restitution, probation, you've got to do it. So that was what they said. I think that's what most voters thought they were doing. And I think voters would look at that in kind of the controversy that was put, is that, oh, someone could be a convicted felon and not have paid a restitution or paid what they owe for committing their crimes. That's not what the people voted for. So I feel confident that it was done in a way that reflects the will of the people. And I think it will be upheld in court.
Myrna Perez, the governor says that fines, restitution, fees, all of that is part of the sentence to begin with, and that you haven't fully paid that debt to society until you've paid all of those dollars as well. Other people might look at the governor and say this is just another effort, especially by Republicans in Florida, to keep people from voting whose votes they might not like. But does he have a point? I mean, aren't the fines and fees part of the original sentence of being someone convicted with a felony?
We as a country have said we do not condition the right to vote on wealth. It has been upheld by numerous Supreme Court precedents. It is a value that Americans have. Rich or poor, you're allowed in the ballot box. And a law cannot be interpreted in a way that violates our constitutional principles. We have had a federal judge and then a federal appellate court agree that conditioning the restoration of your voting rights based on your ability to pay is an anathema to the federal constitution. Now, what I wish that the governor was doing and the legislators that passed this bill were doing instead was figure out how to change their states such that fewer people get caught up in the criminal justice system, that there are more job opportunities, more education, more access to addiction services. I prefer that our prison systems do a better job at providing services needed for rehabilitation. I'd prefer that our legislators spend more time trying to figure out exactly what needs to be done in order to keep our communities safe and functioning, instead of wasting a lot of taxpayer dollars fighting a lawsuit in which two federal courts have already said that we cannot condition the right to vote on one's ability to pay.
Well, Joe tweeted this: the punishment system has been used to disenfranchise people of color since Reconstruction. Restoring the right to vote for all, including the currently incarcerated, is a necessary correction to this injustice. And Bailey tweeted this: I'm a criminal defense attorney who works with convicted felons every day. The fact that these people have done their time or paid for the punishment or whatever should mean that they are eligible for all of the rights and services available to everybody. And we've been asking you, if you're unable to vote because of a felony conviction, here's what one listener shared with us.
Hi, my name is Michael. I'm from Minneapolis, and I have a felony on my record, so I am unable to vote. And especially in this time of difficult political environment, it's really hard not to be able to voice my opinion. But a couple of things that bother me the most are the disconnect between the crime that I committed and now the inability to voice my opinion. And I just don't quite get it. Maybe there's a reason in the Constitution or the Founding Fathers or wherever this was created. I guess that's kind of what I'd like to know. How did this come about and what's the rationale behind it?
Myrna, where does this come from? That's Michael's question. What is the rationale for denying people with felonies the right to vote?
That is a very, very fair question. And unfortunately, most of these laws disenfranchising people with criminal convictions come from some of our country's most shameful past. As a condition of rejoining the union, states had to change their state constitutions to permit African-American men the ability to vote, needed to grant them the ability to vote, needed to no longer disenfranchise them because of the color of their skin. And so after the Civil War, we saw two important trends work together. One, we saw an expanded criminalization of activity that had been associated with behaviors or conditions or punishments that had been put on what newly freed slaves had done. For example, the idea of petty larceny being made into a felony, right? The idea of taking agricultural crops, turning that into a felony. So we saw an expanded criminalization, and then we saw an increase in the number of states that disenfranchised you upon criminalization or upon becoming criminal justice involved. And those two trends together ended up putting us in a very similar position as a country that we were prior to the enactment of the 14th and the 15th Amendment. There is a part of the federal constitution in the 14th Amendment which the Supreme Court has read to permit states to enact laws disenfranchising for people with criminal convictions. But that is not a blanket permission. There are certain limits on it. You can't do it just to discriminate against people on the basis of race. You can't do it just to discriminate on the basis of wealth. And one really important thing that we're doing is we're seeing states change their policies. Over the last 20 years, numerous states have expanded their policies so that folks are more inclusive. For example, just a few months ago, the state of New Jersey passed a law that would restore voting rights to people upon being released, which will put about 80,000 people back into our democracy. We've seen states like Louisiana change their laws so that people who are on probation or on parole but not been incarcerated.
Myrna, hold the line there. I think we're having a little bit of trouble with your line, but we'll get it straightened out. We'll shake that line a little bit and get it sounding good. We're talking about voting rights for people convicted of felonies in America. It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Now, Desmond, I understand that after all of your fights with the state of Florida, with Amendment 4, even after getting your law degree, which you mentioned, you registered to vote in January of 2019 for the first time since you were convicted. Tell me a little bit about what that was like. What was going on in your mind?
That was an amazing moment. I remember driving to the supervisor of elections to register, and I had my son in the car with me, and I thought back to the civil rights era when parents, would dress their kids up and take their kids with them to the voting poll, and how voting was a part of a family tradition, and civic engagement was a family discussion held at the dinner table. And it dawned on me that now that I'm going to be able to register to vote for the very first time in my life, I would actually be able to lead my family to the polls and vote with them, And so that was a huge, huge experience. But what was even more compelling was the stories that we were getting, right? We had people on that day that lost the right to vote before they were even old enough to be able to vote. And now they were just getting it back, and they were going to register to vote along with their son, who just turned 18. So father and son registering at the same time. Or the individual that the last time they voted for John F. Kennedy, and now they're getting ready, they're being able to vote again. So that day was a day of celebration, understanding that we had this opportunity because just a few months earlier, people went to the polls and voted out of love and compassion and forgiveness for their loved ones and their family members and friends. And so the day that we were registering was a continuation of that same spirit that we wanted to embrace. And well, listen, they had confetti all over the place throughout supervisor of elections offices in Florida. They were rolling out the red carpet.
It's a celebration.
Everybody was celebrating the expansion of democracy.
Yeah,
and that was a beautiful, beautiful day.
Hey, Desmond, we got this from EJ, who says, I'll admit, I used to be one of those people who thought that people with felony convictions should not vote. I changed my mind a few years ago. Desmond Mead is reminding me why I changed my mind. He's eloquent, persuasive, with firsthand experience. Thank you, sir, for sharing. That's what EJ says, Desmond.
Wow, that's a great compliment. You know, one of the things that I've experienced through the campaign trail, you know, like I said, I've been doing this work for several years, and I've traveled the state of Florida and had so many conversations. And one thing that's always constant, man, is that when people, when we take away the politics of it, right, and we just look at the heart of what we're talking about, when we're talking about forgiveness and redemption, and we think about it in the light of someone who we love, or someone, a family member who's close to us that's ever made a mistake in their lives, it tap into, I believe, a natural instinct that all of us have, right? So how many of us, you know, or any of your listeners would say that they don't ever want to be forgiven for anything they've ever done for the rest of their lives? You know, and knowing that forgiveness is something that's inherent with us, I know that when we have conversations with people, they come around. And that was very evident on election night when a million more people voted for Amendment 4 than for any candidate that was on the ballot.
Well, Desmond, we got to go, but I just want to let you know that for me, one of the most persuasive parts about this so far has been the idea of participation. We talk a lot about rehabilitation versus punishment on this show, and the country's talking about it because of prison reform and criminal justice reform. But part of rehabilitation, it seems, would be participation.
Most definitely. You know, I've always said that the more inclusive our democracy is, the more vibrant it becomes. And the more vibrant our democracy becomes, it's good for everyone. You know, and so we should do everything to encourage participation, and let us be guided by this four-letter word called love. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when I break it down into its simplest forms, it's wanting for your neighbor what you want for yourself. And so I ask folks to think about how would they feel if someone told them that their voice don't matter, that they'll never get the way in on it because of a mistake that they made 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, right? That they don't count anymore, right? And that's not a good feeling, right? And if our democracy is to be great, if our democracy is to be vibrant, then we must do everything we can to encourage people to participate in it, and we lead with love.
That's Desmond Mead, president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. We also heard from Mina Perez of the Brennan Center for Justice. Desmond, thank you for joining us. We're going to continue our series, Block from the Ballot, next Tuesday with a look at voting rights for two different groups, the intellectually disabled and residents of U.S. territories. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink, Katie Klein, and Rupert Allman. To learn more about them, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. Distributed by NPR, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you for listening. It's 1A.